Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our goal on today's show is to get you excited about reading books. Books in general, books about Alaska, and books written by Alaskan. That can be a tall order in our busy summer. Still, we have downtime on the back deck, in tents, cabins, boats, and docks. So squeeze in a book. Of course, you can save these book suggestions for the deep dark of our cocooning winters, but there's never a bad time to get a good book recommendation. So to accomplish our goal, we've got authors on the phone and a librarian in the studio. Doug McAllister, the Alaska Collection Librarian at the Anchorage Public Library, will be with me the whole hour as we talk with different authors and different book and about different books. Welcome, Doug.
Well, thank you. Very excited to be here.
Very happy to have you. And now for the first segment of the show, we have two authors on the phone. We'll start with Mark Adams in New York. His book, Tip of the Iceberg, just came out. It's a travel book with a well-researched historical spine following the route of the 1899 Harriman Expedition. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you, sorry you're in New York. Just kidding.
I am, too. June's a good time to be in Alaska.
It is. Also on the phone right now from Homer, we have Nancy Lord, one of Alaska's writer laureates, author of 11 books, including Green Alaska, Dreams from the Far Coast. Also, it's a book about the Harriman Expedition, and Nancy just reviewed Tip of the Iceberg in the Sunday Anchorage Daily News, so she's very familiar with Mark's book and with the Harriman Expedition, so I think that's going to lend us some good conversation. So welcome, Nancy.
Thank you, Kathleen. Happy to be here.
And just before we get started with Mark and Nancy and Doug, let me say quickly that in the second segment, we're doing some musical chairs here. After our first short break, we will say goodbye to Mark, but we will welcome Nicole Stellan O'Donnell on the phone from Fairbanks. Her novel, Told in Poems, Steam Laundry, is based on the true story of a miner's wife during the Klondike and Alaska gold rushes. It is also the 2017-2018 Alaska Reads selection, meaning she's been traveling and talking to audiences about the book all year. So that will be our second segment. And finally, in the third segment, it's just going to be me and Doug, and we will be talking more about books. He's brought a canvas bag full of books here. We will talk a little bit about the Great American Read, which is an initiative this summer to get Americans to vote for their favorite novel out of a field of 100. So more on all that later. But one more thing, listeners, join us in this book conversation. We welcome your questions to these authors and to our librarian throughout the show. And we look forward to hearing some of your book suggestions, too. So you can give us a call. And then I'll get started on our conversation. If you're in Anchorage or Girdwood or Eagle River, give us a call at 550-8433. And statewide and in Seward and the Valley and outside of Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. Or you can skip all the geography and just send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, now we're finally going to get started. So everybody there, hello, Mark, again.
Hello.
Why don't you, I read how you kind of got hooked, but tell us the story of how the Harriman Expedition became the next book you had to write, or how Tip of the Iceberg became the next book you had to write.
Well, you know, as I described a little bit, as you mentioned, you know, I was in Seattle at a busy intersection, and there's this totem pole there, which is not very uncommon in Seattle nor Alaska, but beneath this one was a U.S. Parks Ranger in a smoky bear hat, which struck me as a little odd. So I was like, what's the story here, dude? And he said, well, this totem pole here is a replica of one that was stolen because of the famous Harriman Expedition in 1899. I was like, Harriman, like Edward Harriman, the railroad tycoon? He's like, yeah, he got all these great American natural scientists and artists and writers together. He, you know, like John Muir and George Bird Grinnell. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. John Muir went on a cruise to Alaska with Edward Harriman, you know, one of the great rapacious capitalists of all time, you know, John Muir, the founder of the Sierra Club. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, there's got to be a story here. So I went to the library, looked it up. You know, it's my job to know a little bit about the history of exploration. And I had never heard of the Harriman Expedition. And Nancy's book is one of the first ones I came across. And I was like, this is a great story. A lot of my books retrace famous expeditions, you know, look at the history and then, you know, see how things have changed between whenever the most interesting thing happened, and today, and that's what I did with the Harriman Expedition. I decided to retrace what they had done in a luxury steamship, mostly by using the marine ferries. So I would go from town to town to town along the way and spent most of the summer 2 summers ago in Alaska.
You know, Mark, something I think I read in your introduction or close in is your books are not how to go or necessarily what to see, but it's like why to go. And yeah. I think that really pulls me along as a listener because, you know, I've lived in Alaska a number of years. I've been in some of these places, but somehow walking on that ground, knowing the story more fully is really satisfying. So,
The question, you know, I'm starting right around now, a million people are going to take cruises up the Inside Passage, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're expecting the biggest year ever. I would guess less than 1% of those people know that they're following a route that was pioneered and made popular by John Muir in 1879 and 1880, when he took his famous trips that climaxed in Glacier Bay. And Harriman himself wanted to follow the route that Muir had made popular during that period. And, you know, when people read these books, they say, you know, God, I didn't know the whole backstory. You know, I wrote a book about Machu Picchu in Peru. And they're like, you know, I didn't know, you know, the Spaniards and the Incas and, you know, how this American explorer had come here 100 years ago, and that's why people go to Machu Picchu or, you know, take a cruise in Alaska. You know, I just thought it was all about taking a cool photo for my Instagram page. You know, so if you could just go one or two levels deeper and meet the people and talk to the people. What I always say is I don't write about places, I write about people.
Yeah. And you know, I imagined you out there, and I was thinking, when I travel, I get lonely, and you made references to being lonely, too, and also maybe shy, and yet you constantly have to be reaching out and breaking the ice, and I mean, it happens all throughout your book. I'm thinking about Wrangell Island, where you were talking about a guy named Mike, who you felt you were very different types of people, but his generosity was so overwhelming and kind, and, you know, you told that story. So,
which is so typical of Alaska, and I don't think most people know that, you know, about Alaska. And I think, you know, it's because a lot of people live in these small communities, and, you know, conditions do tend to be a little bit harsh, that, you know, people who, you know, in my town, I live just north of the city in Westchester County, New York City, you know, if you've got someone who's a far-right Republican and you've got someone who's a far-left liberal, you know, they're not going to come within 100 yards of each other unless they absolutely have to. Whereas in Alaska, you know, if you're in a town of 500 or 1,000 people, you're going to be dealing with these people on an everyday basis. You have to figure out a way to get along, you know.
You may need them.
It was, well, you know, or be working with them on the volunteer fire department or on the school board or you know, whatever. And you know, for me, that was one of the great revelations of Alaska, just, you know, meeting these people in these small towns. And as you noted, you know, for me, I live in terror of having to talk to strangers. That's not my fallback mode. Yeah. So, you know, people say, oh, your job is so fun. Your life is a perpetual vacation. And I'm like, no, I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning thinking, God, who do I have to talk to tomorrow? Do I have to talk to a stranger?
I have to
you know,
be brave.
Am I forgetting to call?
Yeah.
You know, who should I be calling right now?
Yeah. Let me ask Nancy just a little bit about what snagged you about the Harriman and led to Green Alaska. Tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I've lived in Alaska for a long time, and I just always sort of came across references to the Harriman Expedition in things that I read, and they were always just these little, you know, Harriman Expedition of 1899, and I never really knew about it, but I was curious. And then when about 1996, I realized that the centennial was coming up. I thought, well, what a great subject for a book, try to have something come out in 1999 for the anniversary. And so I started doing more, you know, serious research into it. And back then it was kind of largely sort of pre-internet. I did, you know, wasn't that easy to find information as it is today. And so I ended up sort of just retracing a very small portion of the trip as a kind of a jumping off point to talk about the trip, and it's kind of a reimagining, contrasting my experiences in Alaska with some reimaginings of their trip, and then the really fun thing that happened after that was that there were a couple of cruise companies in the later years that decided to retrace the Harriman expedition, and so I went to work as a historian and naturalist on some trips that actually, you know, retrace the real route. And so I got to go to all those amazing places like the Pribilof Islands and St. Matthew's Island
wow.
and so on. And so now I know a lot more
yeah.
than when I wrote that book.
Yeah. When
yeah.
you were
it's an amazing itinerary.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nancy, when you were reading Mark's book, were you having flashbacks or you know, what struck you about reading Mark's book?
Well, a lot of things struck me, but I have to say, Mark, I was prepared to be annoyed.
Yeah.
Because there are so many people from outside Alaska who kind of, you know, parachute in to you know, take a look around and then write kind of a authoritative book about Alaska, and they're usually very wrong and very shallow, full of mistakes, you know, very naive. And so that's what I was prepared for, and I was so happy that your book, you know, really is great. And I, you know, I gave it a great review in the Anchorage paper. And
thank you.
And I mean, I just thought, you know, it's that combination of really well researched, especially in the history, and then your experience. And I saw a little, I don't know if it was a book trailer, I think, online, where you talked about the book a little bit, and you mentioned your approach, which I really appreciated. You said every book needs to have a buffoon in it.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think that's the word you used.
That's right.
Right.
And that in
and
your that, case,
and the buffoon is always
the author. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so I like that you were very kind of self-deprecating in the book and, you know, admitted when you were didn't know things or were acting in a, you know, ridiculous way by Alaskan standards. So,
you know, I find
it's
that
a book
people,
I recommend.
Thank you very much. You know, but I did, you know, to speak to that, I do find that people will swallow almost anything if you can make them laugh at least once every page or two. You know, my last book, I was talking to people around the world who thought that they could find the lost city of Atlantis. And there's like a whole chapter on ancient Pythagorean geometry and how it influenced, you know, Plato the philosopher. And, I mean, you can't get much drier than that. So
yeah.
if I get people to read that chapter... Alaska is a cakewalk.
Well, you know, I was thinking, Nancy, you brought up that idea that you were prepared to be, you know, irritated by one more person coming to the Great Land to do their piece. Mark, for you, did it feel intrusive? I mean, you did a lot of work before you got here, so you knew a lot, so you weren't on shaky ground, you know, you knew a lot and you knew where you were going. But did you feel like an intruder sometimes?
A little bit, you know. When you get into these small towns, you know, the word goes around right away. Like when I was in Metlakatla,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, everybody in town knew I was there within about 30 minutes, you know, and there's 800 people there. So it's not like you're sneaking up on anybody. You know, it's not like Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes shoving a microphone in someone's face and saying, you know, tell me about the permanent fund dividend or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all you can do is just show up and say, look, I know some, I'd like to know more, and I'm really curious. Can I buy you lunch?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the methodology.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I want Doug brought a book in here, and he thought, Mark, you might be interested to know. I know you can't see
yeah.
it because we're talking over the radio waves, but Doug, tell us just a little bit about that book.
Well, when Kathleen asked me to come on board for this hour, I went down into the dungeon. We call it the dungeon, but
yeah.
it's basically where we keep a lot of books that not very many people are interested in looking at. And the people who are interested in looking at are usually scholars and researchers and people
mm-hmm.
who are aware and curious. And I had remembered that we have a nearly complete set of the Harriman volumes. So I went through there
oh, yeah.
and I picked out the one on glaciers, particularly because my introduction to Harriman and his little expedition, or large expedition, came about 20 years ago when I was planning a kayak trip into Harriman Fjord. And
yeah.
so my curiosity, my natural curiosity was, well, who's this Harriman guy, and why does he get to have a fjord named after him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and those books are mm-hmm. so beautiful because they were so expensively done. Harriman
mm-hmm.
paid for them, and the photographs are not quite 2D and not quite 3D. They're like 2.5D.
Yes.
Because of the printing process.
Yes.
They're unlike anything I've ever seen.
Yes.
And, you know, you've got Edward Curtis, the photographer, whose work is in there. Mm-hmm. Hart Merriam, who himself was a wonderful photographer. And the, you know, the John Burroughs narrative is wonderful. It's very evocative and wry. And, you know, those books are just fantastic.
Yeah. And the, the simplicity of the sketches.
My father-in-law actually has a copy of one of those.
Oh,
and
great.
He showed it to me not long ago. I was like, why didn't you give this to me 2 years ago?
That would have helped.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, for anybody who's just joined us and you're wondering, what are they talking about? We have John Adams, who just released Tip of the Iceberg, a travel book that is really follows the route of the Harriman expedition. And on us, the phone with us, also we have Nancy Lord from Homer, who wrote Green Alaska, which follows part of the Harriman expedition. And then eventually she became a naturalist and got to travel further on the route of the Harriman expedition. And I also have Doug McAllister from Lusac Library, who's the Alaska collection. And so I know we only have you a few more minutes, so I want to say, Mark, you singled out John Muir right away, and even Doug and I were sitting here talking before the show, and he was like, that is the most colorful character. So talk a little bit about John Muir and why you focus so much on him and anything about that.
Well, you know, for starters, you know, John Muir is the start of tourism in Alaska. You know, he goes up in 1879, 1880, starts writing about these glaciers. He's an early glaciologist, sends these dispatches back to the San Francisco newspapers, and they're, you know, written in this wonderful purpley, florid style because he had memorized the Old Testament as a child. And he's just this great personality. He looks like Father Time. He speaks with a Scottish accent. You know, he looks like a Looney Tunes character. And he just, you know, he speaks in these complete paragraphs that are absolutely mesmerizing. Mm. So once I knew that John Muir was part of this expedition, I knew that he was going to be one of, if not the main character that I was going to latch on to.
Mm. I enjoyed the story of him having the big bonfire up on the side of the mountain and people really being worried and concerned about that. I forget exactly what.
Yeah, just nuts.
Yeah.
Absolutely nuts.
And Nancy, did he figure as large for you, or was there another character in Green Alaska from the Harriman expedition that captured your imagination?
Yeah, I really zeroed in on John Burroughs, partly because I'd grown up with his books in New Hampshire. My great-grandmother had a set of his books, and I carried the one that was his narrative for the Harriman expedition with me. Is called In Green Alaska, and I named my book Green Alaska after his narrative. But yeah, I mean, they were just a great pair, the two, you know, the two Johnnies.
Oh yeah,
I sort of responded more to Burroughs. And if I could mention one other book, that's a new book that came out, and I don't know, Mark, if you've seen it yet, but Dan Henry, who used to live in Haines, he has a new book. It's called Across the Shaman's River. John Muir, the Tlingit Stronghold, and the Opening of the North, and it's an important addition to that literature.
Definitely a terrific scholarship there. Yeah.
Oh wow!
Terrific book.
And one more thing, we probably have about a minute or so, 2 minutes before we have to take a break. But I guess I'd like to ask each of you, would you want people to take away from your book? I mean, would it? That's a very broad question, so try and give me an answer. If there's one thing people walked away from, both Tip of the Iceberg and Green Alaska, what would you like it to be? And let's start with you, Mark.
Well, first of all, it's, you know, it's sort of a celebration of Alaska. And the other thing is that it's really underplayed how much the Harriman expedition sort of secondhand influenced what Alaska has become. Because in 1899, there were all these small-level environmental crises going on, and these guys like Muir, George Bird, Grinnell, Hart Merriam, they could go back to D.C. and talk to their friend Teddy Roosevelt, who all of a sudden said, well, gosh, I'm going to start setting aside millions and millions of acres of Alaska so that it'll stay this way forever. Now, I know some people agree with that, some people disagree, but the Alaska we know was deeply, deeply influenced by the Harriman expedition.
And how about you, Nancy?
I agree with what Mark just said. And I guess what surprised me in doing the research and then the bit of travel was the environmental aspects of the whole thing, which Mark's just referred to, but I guess I want people to realize that there were some real significant environmental crises with fisheries and marine mammals. You know, the sea otter was almost extinct and, you know, so on back then, and that we were able to recover from those, but only because, you know, of you know, actions that people took. And so it's an interesting contrast between a time that we think of as being very sort of pristine nature, and it really was being devastated.
Yeah. Should we take hope in that we can face things and move past them? Because fisheries came back in many respects, although they face challenges today. So, I mean, do you read that as we can face difficulties and we can do the right thing and we can balance the boat? Or what do you think?
The key is having enlightened leadership. Mm-hmm. And you can take that for whatever you choose to take that for.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you, Nancy?
Leadership at all levels. But I would also say that the problems today are so much more difficult than in the past. Then it was a matter of, you know, stop blockading the rivers so the fish could get up and spawn. That was kind of a simple thing to do. Now we're dealing with, you know, ocean warming and acidification and, global overfishing and, you know, so many more things. So the issues are just
complex,
way harder to deal with.
Complex, yeah. Well, I encourage people to read both of these books and because I read in one review, Nancy, that people said reading your book gives the reader a deeper idea of Alaska, and I found that very compelling. So I encourage people to read Tip of the Iceberg by Mark Adams and Green Alaska by Nancy Lord. And I have to say goodbye, Mark, and turn you back to Westchester County above New York City.
I'm off to Brooklyn.
Okay.
You guys have fun.
All right. You take care.
All right, guys. All right. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, sitting right across from Doug McAllister, who's the librarian for the Alaska Collection at Lusac Library. We just finished up with Mark Adams, the writer who just released Tip of the Iceberg, and Doug here and Mark and Nancy Lord and Homer, who wrote Green Alaska. We were just chatting about the Harriman Expedition, some of the stories out of it, some of the reasons to read these books, a little bit about outsiders coming up and writing about Alaska and how Tip of the Iceberg managed to get beyond that and to really get a recommendation from Nancy Lord that Alaskans, longtime Alaskans, as well as visitors would really appreciate this book. So now we're about to start the second segment of Hometown Alaska, and I want to welcome, we still have Nancy with us on the phone from Homer, but at this point we're welcoming Nicole Stellan O'Donnell from Fairbanks. Hello, Nicole.
Hi, Kathleen.
So happy to have you. Thank you for making some time.
I'm glad to be here.
I came to you for this book, this show on books, because your book, Steam Laundry, is the selection for Alaska Reads for 2017 and 2018, and it's really a very interesting book. It's based on a true story, but told through poetry, told through your imagining. So I just want to hear a little bit about the character that inspired this book, why you decided to do the book, and once we get through with that, maybe a little bit about what it's been like for you traveling around the state and talking about the book. And by the way, you know Doug McAllister because you were here in, he laughed. And by the way, Nancy, he's from New Hampshire also, so maybe you go way back. I don't know. But
fellow Granite Staters.
Yeah. So anyway, Nicole, let's go to you and let's hear you talk a little bit about how this book came to be, what captured you about, was it Sue Ellen? I forget what her name is right now.
Sarah Ellen Gibson.
How did you find her?
Yeah, well, I found out about Sarah Ellen Gibson when I was a grad student way back in 1994 or so in Fairbanks in the MFA program. And I had grand designs to write my graduate thesis as a series of persona poems in voice of a historical figure, because I had admired a lot of writers who had done that. Andrew Hudgens did it in After the Lost War. I has written a lot of poems like that, and I just enjoyed the form, and I didn't want to write about myself. And so I was researching in the library, the archives, the Alaska Polar Region Archives, looking for women who came to Fairbanks in the early days of Fairbanks if they had letters that I could just dig into, kind of historical eavesdropping. And I found her papers, but it took me many, many years to get to writing that. My thesis didn't wind up being that book. And in 2007, I started working on it more in earnest. After my kids were born, I was busy. And I got a Rasmussen Project Award to do the research. It actually paid for my daycare. And so at that point...
real-life problem-solving.
It is real-life problems. And thank you to the Rasmussen Foundation for providing child care, because that's why my book exists.
Wow.
And so I dug in and I read all her letters, all the letters to her. There were over 700 letters, and then tried to reconstruct a story of her experience at that time in coming to Alaska. So that's what the book is, and it is told in persona poems. So there are poems in her voice, in her son's voices, in her ex-husband's voices, in her lover's voice, in many different voices. So in all the characters' voices who are in her life.
You know, Nicole, what I really found fascinating, and I really appreciate the program you did for us at LUSAC. It was very well received. I got a lot of
positive.
Yeah, a lot of positive comments. As someone who reads almost entirely nonfiction and has a struggle with trying to get into poetry a little bit, because I do like a lot of traditional poetry. I was really fascinated by how that steam laundry turned into a page turner for me.
Yes, me just, too. Yeah.
I mean, it felt like I was reading a unique history on the Gold Rush, and I really enjoyed that book a lot from that aspect. And I'm wondering if you've gotten any other feedback in regards to that.
I have. It's interesting because I didn't think of that as I was writing. For me, I tend to write in shorter forms, I think due to my own lack of attention span. A novel is absolutely beyond me. And so short pieces really work for me as a writer. And so the kind of novel in poems form, or historical novel in poems form, was really helpful to me as a writer. And I didn't think about the impact on readers until later. I did realize early on that I wasn't just writing a few poems, that this was turning into a whole book. And so that's one of the differences. Poets don't usually set out, I think, to write a book. And I think that's a tendency I have. Maybe I don't have the attention span to write a whole book, so I do it through poems. It's actually a really popular form in young adult right now. Kwame Alexander and many other writers are publishing, I think there's there are publishing novels and poems. Ellen Hopkins writes a lot of books for teens. And so it actually is a very popular form, but generally people who don't read young adult aren't as familiar with it. It's become popular in the last maybe 4 or 5 years.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, I have a email a question for you, and I think it's really addressed to Doug and Nicole. When writing fiction based in real geography, how do you decide what real names to use and what names to change? In Laundry, it's a mix of real and made-up Sitka area names. So what do you think?
I'm trying to think of what made-up names are in Steam Laundry.
Okay.
Because I used the letters from... I used all the stuff that was in the letters.
Okay.
So if they're thinking about people's names... there aren't very many made-up names in the book.
Ah, I just heard back again from this listener who says, wrong book.
Good, we're in agreement.
You're off the hook. Okay.
I think that's a great question, though, because for me, I felt like the Gibsons had put this in the archives. So in that way, as a writer, I felt a little bit of absolution that there was permission for artists and writers and scholars to use their papers. So I did use real names in my work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are no Gibsons that still live in Fairbanks. Tom and his wife, Tom is the main character son, did not have any children, and his brother died very young and childless. So there weren't any Gibsons who are still living in Fairbanks or still living that I know of directly related to the Gibsons.
Let me just take a second here to put our phone numbers out for folks who might have a question for Doug or might have a question for Nicole. In Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Statewide, 1-888-353-5752. Or we can take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I have a question for Nicole. When you write in the voice of, for example, your main character or her husband or her sons, how do you get your head in that place to do that?
Well, part of it, that's a really good question. I didn't partition my process and think, now I'm writing as Tom. What I actually did, because of the rules of the archive in Fairbanks at the time, and I believe they're still the same, you're not allowed to photograph any letters, or it was difficult to get copies. Some of the Gibson letters don't copy well because they're very fragile. So I was actually typing in whole letters to my computer so that I could go home and rework, revisit them again and again.
Right.
And that process put me into the mind of each character. So... So I didn't have a conscious process for it, but I think that act of typing in their words into my own computer as I wrote was part of getting into that space.
That makes some sense to me, too.
I suspect most readers would be astonished as to the number of hours that goes into producing a volume.
Right.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I don't even know. I have no idea, but I got my project award. And at the time I applied, only 10 poems existed from the manuscript. That was 2007. My daughter was 1.5. And so then I had daycare, and then I thought, naively, and at the end of the year I'll have the book done. The book did not come out until 2012.
Wow.
So I think it actually, the manuscript wasn't finished until 2010, and then wasn't published until 2 years later, because the publication process takes a long time, too. So it was years of writing, yeah.
Wow, you were young when you began. So if you're joining us, I'm talking with Nicole Stellan O'Donnell in Fairbanks. Her book, Steve Laundry, is the 2017-2018 Alaska Reads Selection. And I'm also in the studio here with Doug McAllister, who is a librarian from the Alaska Collection here in Lusac. So, Nicole, how did your book get selected for Alaska Reads? Do you know, or was it just a pleasant surprise?
I don't know. It was a very pleasant surprise. I got a phone call that said it had been nominated or was being discussed by the committee. I know there's a committee. And then it said, and it was Frank Sos. He was the original founder of the program. In the first round, we should acknowledge Ernestine Hayes' book, Blonde Indian, which is an excellent memoir. And if you haven't read it, it was the first Alaska Read selection in the 2 years before mine. So, they had the committee met, and my book was one of the ones they were seriously considering. And at that point, they reached out to me to say, are you willing to do this? And what that meant for me was taking some time off from work to travel and visit libraries and visit readers. So I, you know, took a day to think about it, and I thought, yeah, I'll do that. So, I don't actually know how they choose, but I do know that they do find out if the writer's willing to travel.
Well, I serve on the committee for the Alaska Center for the Book.
Good.
And one thing that people on committees like that really look for, people who love books, and are working on projects like that, and they're looking for a definite uniqueness that sets it apart from other books.
Mm-hmm.
And Steam Laundry just, I think, appealed to a lot of us as being extremely unique.
Mm-hmm. And Nicole, tell me, what has it been like traveling with your book, accompanying your book? I'm not sure where all you went. I think I saw a picture from Kodiak. I don't know. What has it meant?
Well, I can give you the list. I actually made sure I remembered everybody before we started talking today. So it started in Fairbanks, so the kickoff as my hometown with a library here, and then not necessarily in order, or I'll try and put it. Well, I won't put it in order. It's easier that way. I did visit Homer, Sitka, Juneau, Soldotna, Anchorage, and some of these places had many events. Part of my Anchorage visit was the Alaska Library Association conference and doing a presentation there with some of the Alaska Reads organizers. And I also went to Kodiak. I was supposed to go to Haines, but of course, as travel in Alaska goes, it was not a day one could fly to Haines. And it was a quick turnaround in that schedule, so I never did make it to Haines. So I went a bunch of places, and I'm sorry, what was your did you have more on that question, Kathleen, or does
oh,
that
just if
it?
Whether there were any stories about the way people related to the book or the main character.
It was really interesting for me because, you know, I've had people talk to me about all different aspects of the book. For example, there's a poem about the birth of Sir Ellen's son, Tom, and someone once asked me, like, is that a real story? And I had to admit, yes, actually, that's the story of how my daughter was born, because I don't know how Tom Gibson was born, so I plugged that in. And so those kind of things. But one thing that had never happened with Steam Laundry that happened on this trip is a miner came up to me, a guy who is actually spending his life, you know, up north in an isolated area, still gold mining. And he came up and he called himself a failed miner. And he said, I could really relate to your book because it's about unsuccessful gold miners. And he went on to tell me the story of how he had lost all his money and he was trying to get money. He was living in a tent right then, but he wanted to come to my reading because it was this book that he was interested in because of the take on it, that it was this story of a longing for, well, I mean, he didn't say riches, but like this longing for gold that was unfulfilled. And that was really interesting to me to have someone kind of confess their personal connection to, especially Joe Gibson, the ex-husband in the book, who did not have success at mining. And whereas for me, my vision of the book, I mean, the character that I see as the main characters, the main character is Sarah Ellen Gibson and then her son Tom as a secondary main character. So it was interesting for me to see him connect with the suffering of some of the other characters.
Right, as well. Right.
Yeah, it was really blew my mind. You know, after so many, the book was published in 2012, so this is so many years later and still a totally new perspective is coming out at me as the author.
Right. And this is a tough question to answer, but what did you love about your main character? What did you love about Sarah Ellen? Why did she tip you over the edge and you had to write?
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Well, I had decided I wanted to write in the voice of a historical figure, like I said. And the big thing logistically, there are a lot of letters in the Gibson collection. And you'll find if you dig in the archives, you might find something very interesting, but you don't actually find much of it. Mm. You might find this beautiful piece of history you'd like to write about. But the Gibson papers were very, very extensive. Mm-hmm. In addition, I liked that she was not successful, and that was one of my requirements. I feel like so much of our literature of the Alaska Gold Rush, of that portion of our history, because it is only a tiny portion of Alaska history, minuscule in time that this, you know, place has been around, I feel like so much of it was along the lines of, like, you know, a million pounds of gold, you know, just celebrating success. Yeah. Look who went north and look who made it big. And then I thought to myself, well, what about all the people for whom this was an absolute disaster? Mm-hmm. And so her story appealed to me that way. Although the reason the papers are preserved is her son, Tom Gibson, would have been considered a Fairbanks kind of success story, not in gold mining, but in other businesses. Yeah. So her papers were this footnote saved only because of her son.
Wow. Oh, interesting.
Being a prominent Fairbanks. And yeah, she was kind of an afterthought.
Yeah.
And then for me, I think what finally led me to write about her, if you think about my life as, you know, an Alaskan who came up to this state, like many of us who came from outside as one of the ways of, you know, Alaska colonization or gold rush moving in, I'm a visitor too. So me coming in and moving to Fairbanks and making my home here, and here I am with two little kids and busy and also working, the idea of writing persona poems is an excellent escape. Mm. It really gives you another space to inhabit from the whatever aspects of your daily life. So for me, it was a way of artistic escape. I didn't really know how to write about diapers. So I, you know, wrote this instead, and it gave me a different life to imagine. You know, not better in any way, and not that diapers are bad, but there's a certain busyness to having a one-year-old and a three-year-old that it let me have some time with away from, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you have other books coming up. Just give us a quick mention of what's coming up for you.
My next book, and I just saw the cover, so I'm all excited. I'm not allowed to share it yet, is coming out in March 2019 from the Marie Alexander series in prose poetry. It's called You Are No Longer in Trouble.
I love the title.
thank you.
I would pick it up just for the title.
Thank you. I'm actually making buttons and pencils with the title on it, so if you want to get on my mailing list for that, jump on my website, and there's a little comment section. You can send me your snail mail address. But, yeah, it's such a moment of absolution. Like, you are no longer in trouble. Isn't that what we're all longing for?
Yes, redemption,
but,
yeah.
Which is, yeah. So basically the book is, it's a memoir in prose poems about my life as a student, as a teacher, as a principal's daughter. And it deals with the persona that I have to wear in the classroom. I am a K-12 high school teacher. I taught at East High School in Anchorage. Mm. I taught in Togiak and in Fairbanks at a large comprehensive high school. And then now I teach at the Fairbanks Youth Facility. So I teach students who are in detention.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looks at all these aspects of it and includes all the things about my growing up as a student.
You sound like one of those people that needs about 2 hours of sleep a night.
Yeah, or that's all you're getting.
Oh, I envy those people. I envy them so much, yeah.
And then there's one other one. It's a little farther out. And what is that one again?
A little further out, I have a book called Everything Never Comes Your Way. And that one is a collection of poems that's going to be published by Boreal Books, which is an imprint of Red Hen Press. And that one, it's a little more philosophical, less narrative than Everything Never Comes Your Way, or You Are No Longer in Trouble. Mm-hmm. So it's a little more, they're lineated poems, so they would look like what you'd imagine poems to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of it deals with, like, philosophical argumentation, and then part of it deals with arguments over what wilderness means.
Ah, mm. So. But the one people can get their hands on right now is Steam Laundry, and it is the Alaska Reads selection for 2017-2018. Again, another effort to get books by Alaska writers out in front of the audience so that we don't miss them. So, Nicole, I'm going to have to say goodbye. We have to take a little break here again, but I so appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today and share the stories behind Steam Laundry, and we'll anticipate your other books coming up.
Thanks a lot, Kathleen. I really appreciate you having me on today.
It was a treat. All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right. And this is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and I'm still in the studio with Doug McAllister, the Alaska Collection Librarian from LUSAC, or Anchorage Public Library, I guess. We are going to talk a little bit about the Alaska Collection in this segment, but also we're going to talk about the Great American Read, which is, you'll see it on the homepage of the LUSAC Library. We have links to it here on alaskapublic.org. If you go to alaskapublic.org and go to Hometown Alaska, I have those links because you can vote. You can start voting now. And so, but anyway, we'll talk about that later. That's the Great American Read. But first, since we've got the librarian for the Alaska Collection, Doug, tell me a little bit about it. And there was a little catastrophe there a little while ago, but people don't know it's okay.
Yeah, there was. We had a bit of a flood. I want to say it was a little bit before Christmas. And it was definitely a bit of a disaster. A pipe broke, and You know, when they build libraries today, the Lusac's fairly old at this point, they run all the water pipes below the books.
What a great idea.
Because as many...
But when you're many stories up,
they definitely do that for special collections like the Alaska Collection. Mm-hmm. And the general part of the library, they probably don't worry too much about that. It's all fairly replaceable. But... you know, as everyone knows, water and paper does not mix, and so we did lose a few volumes. We're in the process of getting a number of volumes that did get damaged, repaired, or replaced. The good news is the Alaska Collection itself is a heavily used collection, and I think our conversations with the writers earlier in this hour really sets forth a wonderful example of the importance of special collections in libraries such as the Alaska Collection and Lusac. So the collection is really entirely intact, and we've moved it from its current location because everything is being replaced over there, carpeting, and so all of the shelves had to come down. It was a monumental, mammoth effort.
I can just imagine.
Yeah, it was pretty big. It took several days to get everything moved.
Just all hands on deck?
That's exactly it. All hands on deck. When I arrived in the morning, I was wondering where everybody was and was immediately told there was a flood, and we sprung into action.
Moved books.
Yes, exactly.
They're on the third floor now. I was just over there getting Nancy's book the other day.
Oh,
so
good.
They're out there.
They're out there.
You still have access to them.
And there are a number of librarians who have quite a bit of experience. Myself, Jill and Charlotte are both extensively trained in the Alaska Collection. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're still extant. We're still going strong. Some of the materials have to be gathered up, like newspaper microfilm. They're over in another part of the building and sort of a special access. But we just get those for you and help you with those.
Let me throw our number out just in case people want to call. Doug, they might have a burning question for you. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752. Or we can also take email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I do want to say that I got an email from someone who wants to do a shout out to her librarian cousin in Fairbanks named Carrie. So this person is listening from South Carolina. So who knows, you know? But I agree that librarians need to get as much credit as possible. Mm. So I'm willing to say shout out to Carrie. But now, as a librarian over there, I wonder, people like Nancy, maybe not specifically, or people like Mark or even Nicole, do they come to you? I mean, what kind of outrageous questions do you get? What do book authors, what are they looking for? Or are there a few trends that you've noticed over the years?
Yeah, well, there's some, you know, typically they will oftentimes tell you what they're working on, and sometimes they don't.
Oh, they don't want to let it out of the bag.
Don't want to let it out of the bag. You know, probably a popular local fellow that we're all familiar with, Charles Woolforth, is a big-time visitor to the Alaska Collection, and we've assisted him on many projects. You know, the people that I enjoy probably most working with, though, are not authors, and they're not doing particular research, but really just folks coming in with a curious bend in their mind about Alaska or whatnot. Once in a while, not very often, but maybe two or three times a year, we'll get an Alaska native come in, for example, and somehow or another, someone has told him that photographs exist of his parents or grandparents, and, you know, he or she will tell us that location, and we'll go to that part of the library and help them dig out some books. And the looks on their faces when they see photographs of parents or grandparents who may be deceased, and they have no photographs, or maybe they've never seen their grandparents, is really quite priceless.
It's emotional, I think.
It's very emotional, and it's a really fun part of the job.
Yeah.
It really makes you think. Every year in the springtime, we always get folks coming in saying, where are the gold maps?
I'm ready to make my fortune now.
Yeah, where's the map that shows where the gold is? The X marks the spot kind of thing. Every year, we also get a lot of folks come in, college kids who work on the Denali bus tours or the Alaska Railroad, and they just want to brush up on Alaskana. They don't really know where to look.
Mm-hmm.
They're not from this area. And there are a number of sources that I point them to, but surprisingly, a very pedestrian source that works very well for them is just simply the Alaska Almanac, because it's got a real brief overview, alphabetical, of Alaska history.
And they probably have to talk about a lot of things and not a lot of time.
And they can't go really in-depth, but they want little snippets, little anecdotes.
What is... I mean, all the books are valuable, but do you have some really valuable books in the Alaska collection that are rare to find?
We do have a wonderful rare book collection. When we moved from downtown to the current location, Anchorage was at the tail end of the pipeline days, and we were in the middle of a lot of building in the 80s, and we had a pretty big budget. So it was the idea that we were going to be sort of an archival institution. So we had a vault built, and
oh, wow.
we had a budget for rare books. Mm. So we have a pretty nice collection. And over the years, we've just gotten a lot of great donations, too, of rare books.
Mm-hmm.
We currently have all three volumes from the Cook Expedition. They're not overly rare, but they're scarce for sure, and they're quite precious and
fun to look at. Have you been involved in, like, buying some rare books for the library?
We haven't purchased rare books in quite a long time. We now concentrate mostly on popular items. We try to buy everything related to Alaska, and we also look at it from a standpoint, is this going to check out, or is it just going to sit on the shelf?
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that a lot of people who don't work in libraries don't understand is that real estate is very valuable. And
the real estate in the library.
Yeah, the bookshelves.
A lot of competition
for
space.
Yeah, the bookshelves, exactly.
Uh-huh.
And if they don't move, if nobody's really reading them, then they have to make space for something that people are going to read.
Right. Well, in the Alaska collection, some stuff is
absolutely essential to have.
Whether it goes out once a year, but on other shelves. Now, how you guys have been, this is not a book question, it's just sort of the building question.
Sure.
You've gone through this amazing transformation there.
Yeah.
And now there's two staircases. I'm so excited I can get up to the third floor. are we almost done with this renovation?
We are almost done. Uh-huh. We've had a few little setbacks here and there, but generally we've been plugging away at it, and we're nearly complete. We're waiting on the tiles to put the facade up in the front, and that's pretty much going to complete it.
Right.
There's other little details here and there. But we're almost done.
I know. I think I read an article recently about just looking for a little more money to finish or something like that. I don't know. And a lot of that times you'll read that in the paper, but you don't know what actually happened.
Sure.
Did they find that that extra pin money to
Yeah, exactly.
Before we sort of touch on the Great American Read, I wanted to know, how did you get to be the Alaska collection librarian?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a long story, but you came from New Hampshire. But books kind of sort of whet your appetite. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about you.
Well, books certainly play a big part. And, the one thing they always tell you when you become involved in librarianship is what they don't want to hear when they ask you on the application, why do you want to become a librarian in graduate school, is because I like books. Because...
Everyone does.
Well, why it's okay to like books, there's so much more to working in a library than simply liking books.
Mm-hmm. How about people?
People is very important. Your customer service skills really need to be up there. You must enjoy working with people for the most part. There are a lot of positions that don't involve working with people. But I, like a lot of people, I grew up with books. My mother was a huge reader.
Back in New Hampshire.
She loved Michener. She loved mystery novels, and she just kept pushing those things on us, and we just kept absorbing them and reading them. I read a lot about the North Country and wanted to come to the Alaska, and eventually made my way here.
Mm-hmm.
I fell into librarianship because my degree is in anthropology, and I knew that I didn't want to go any further in anthropology. I enjoyed the field work and being outside, but endlessly immersing myself in anthropological studies was not something I wanted to do. So I basically just sort of fell into librarianship because there was no other direction for me.
And what do you like to read, Doug?
I'm primarily nonfiction. I used to read a lot of fiction when I was younger. And when I was 4 years in the military, I think I read just about every Louis L'Amour Western there was. And I loved those. But at some point, and I think it was during my college years, I just sort of shifted focus to nonfiction. And I just love nonfiction. For me, it just one book leads to the next, to the next, to the next. I'm currently really big on military history, so I'm reading
a lot
of great narratives. Yeah.
Mention a few if you've got them at the tip of your tongue.
Ah, boy.
I should have warned you.
Yeah, you should have warned me.
Okay. I had one I wanted to recommend, which was Ada Blackjack, Jennifer Nevins.
Oh, yeah.
I really did enjoy that
very much.
It's a great book, and it was one. I've lived here a long time and hadn't really heard of it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to throw out titles for folks, and I wondered if you had any there. You've got a couple books on your desk there. Any that you want to shout out about?
Well, you know, I think, you know, keeping in theme with the history and whatnot, to me, some of the most valuable books are the writers who are able to bring history to people who don't normally read history, because these are the folks that we're looking for. These are the folks we want to catch on. The people who already are love to read history, yeah, we love you, but
you're going to find it anyway.
You're already there.
Mm-hmm. So it's the people that wouldn't naturally pick up a history book.
Yeah, and one great example that's come over my desk in the last years of the series called Aunt Phil's Trunk.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, by Phyllis Downing Carlson and Laurel Downing Bill. And it's a wonderful collection of many volumes. She takes them year by year. This particular one in my hand is 1912 to 1935.
Is this Alaska-based?
This is Alaska-based, mm-hmm. Yep. It's all Alaskan history, and just wonderful little narratives that she brings forth.
Give us the title one more time, because it's not a well-known
It's not
one.
A well-known. It's called Aunt Phil's Trunk, P-H-I-L-S.
Uh-huh.
And they're very popular right now. What else did I bring with me?
You brought the Harriman one.
I brought the Harriman. Let's see. I'm supposed to be talking into the microphone, and I think
yes.
I might have stopped. There's a really fun one if you're interested in politics called Icebound Empire by Elizabeth Tower. That's a very well-written book that's easy to digest. There's a really wonderful volume that it's a little bit more probably young adult, and we recommend it to a lot of readers who come in or are interested in learning about natives of Alaska. Because while there's been a lot of great volumes written, some of them are not particularly accessible mm-hmm. to a younger reader.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we always recommend a lot is by an author over at UAA, and his name is Steve Langdon, and it's simply called Natives of Alaska.
Oh, yeah. I've certainly heard of that. Yeah. By the way, we have about a minute left,
okay.
And I want to make sure we talk about The Great American Read. This is it's a PBS
exactly.
sponsored event. But it's nationwide. LUSAC is part of it.
Yep.
Alaska Public Media is part of it. There's 100 books that are in the running to be the Great American Novel, right?
Yep.
And those were chosen by a poll. But the key thing is all summer long, you're invited to read, and vote.
Yep.
And at alaskapublicmedia.org, you can find the full 100 list. And we have a link to how to vote. And you probably have those same things on Alaska, on the LUSAC Library site
exactly,
as well.
Exactly, yep. And we're very well entrenched in social media, and you'll find it there.
Right.
And if you come into the library, we have a wonderful poster in front of the reference desk. It's huge.
Right.
And it's a list of all the books. You can see the covers.
Right. It's really very colorful.
It's really very colorful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that if you follow Alaska Public Media on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram at Alaska Public, we're also going to be sort of
promoting
it. And I know that we're going to Alaskans and asking Alaskans what their favorite book is. And I know that we have already spoken with Keegan Randall, but you'll just have to wait to see what Keegan has to say about her favorite book. And we're going to get you on the on it as well. So anyway, you hear the music, you know we're out of time. I'd like to thank Doug McAllister, Alaska Collection Librarian at LUSAC Library, Nancy Lord, Alaska author from Homer, Mark Adams, author of the just-released Tip of the Iceberg, and Nicole Stellan O'Donnell, author of the 2017-18 Alaska Reads Selection, Steam Laundry. And I'll be back next week on Hometown Alaska when we'll feature Portugal the Man and talk about their 2018 Grammy win with band member Eric Hawk. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.